Mini episode 426 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 426. This is going to be a gathering of all original FDH Lounge dignitaries today. I am Rick Morris. I'm going to be joined shortly by Jason Jones and by Chris Galloway. Jason, of course, is our chief NFL draft analyst and our senior editor at FantasyDraftHelp.com and the FDH Lounge. And, of course, he was with us for all of our previews of the NFL draft that we had going on. Of course, you can also find the great analysis from FDH at Pro Football Draftology 2014. You can still find that at FantasyDraftHelp.com and at the FDHLounge.com. We're doing a little bit of a postscript today. We did a lot of intensive analysis leading up to the NFL draft, and today is the time to look back at it, to see what teams did that we thought went well, to see what didn't go so well, and where the jury is still out, I suppose. So we're going to talk about that. We'll bring in shortly as well. It has been a tradition the last couple of years when we've done our post-mortems to also do this with original dignitary Chris Galloway. And he is playing in pain. We appreciate him doing this. He's coming off of some shoulder surgery actually just yesterday, so we appreciate that he will be battling through to join us uno momento. But we have Jason Jones, my main man, on the line with us here. Jason, got you on here. How you doing today, my friend?
Great. Most productive I've been in months today.
I'm very glad to hear that. And I know the wheels have been turning for you ever since the NFL draft on some of the things that you were going to say about it. We have a couple of different metrics, actually, that we'll be getting into in a while. One based on your top 100 overall, one based on teams filling their needs, and one based on a combination of the two. So I'll be very interested to hear, once we get to that point, what you and Chris think of that and how it squares with some of your winners and losers. But let's just get into it as far as draft night itself goes while we're waiting for Chris to get on with us here. The night where it all kind of started breaking down a little bit, of course, the Browns making that trade at number four, that's where the chaos kind of really started when it looked like they were going to go for Sammy Watkins and then didn't. Some might say Jacksonville going for Blake Bortles at three really kind of accelerated the process, because while that was a very bad need, we didn't see them making that move. Where did you think things started to go away from expectations? Because it happens every year, and it's almost always in the top four, five, or six. And by the way, that's the NBA and the NFL draft where things really start to break down at that point. But where did you see it crystallizing into the kind of chaos that nobody anticipated?
Well, right out of the gate, the story of this whole draft, really, the charade, the majesty that is the draft, was what was going to happen at one. And I think deep down, everyone knew what was going to happen. You can spin it however you want to, but when scouts and analysts start throwing around terms like once in a generation, once every 25-year kind of player, I don't see how you pass on that. And I don't care what your need is or how your board shapes out. If the guy is that good, and I think most people believe that he is, if, you know, if the whole work ethic thing is straight, Jadeveon Clowney absolutely was going to go number one. Now, believe it or not, I think maybe, depending on your perception of things, it either sways at two or it sways at three. And two is quite simply, it's St. Louis and it's Jeff Fisher, and they don't really ever step out of bounds as far as drafting goes. If it's a boring pick, but it's a good pick, they're going to make it. So I think there we were worried about whether it was Glenn Robinson or if we were going to see some sort of connection to some old ties with Jake Matthews. But either way, I'm pretty sure we all thought it was going to be tackle. And then where it would have been interesting would have been everyone in the world thinking that it was either Khalil Mack or Sammy Watkins at three. The fact that Jacksonville went Bortles is just, it's another, it's a Marvin Levy move, if we can go back to some of our early days. I literally screamed at the TV. You and I both believe in this concept of keep to value above all else. And I don't care how good you think Blake Bortles is going to be. They could have traded down even to 10, 11, 12 and guaranteed they'd still get him. And they could have come away with a king's ransom, but they didn't, which is typical Jacksonville. So I think three is the absolute latest you can say that it started to sort of fall off the wheel.
Yeah, because, again, by draft night, nobody really had Bortles going three to Jacksonville. The irony, as you indicate, is that earlier in the process, it really wouldn't have shocked us, but it had kind of crystallized by draft night that nobody was really high enough on any of the quarterbacks there to take them that highly. And we got Chris Galloway, our good friend and original dignitary, on the lines with us as well. So I will start by directing the same question to him as I thank him for playing through pain, as I know that he is today. But, Chris, how you holding up, buddy? And where did you think the chaos really started on draft night?
You know, I didn't – you know, I guess I am a little in disagreement on this. I didn't – I wasn't shocked at all by the Jaguars taking Bortles – at number three. And I do disagree a little bit that they could have guaranteed themselves in later on by trading down. I mean, I think that they knew that, you know, the Vikings were there as a possibility. The Raiders were there as a possibility. I wasn't shocked by that decision, I guess, at all. And I don't know, maybe I'm the outlier on that. The Jaguars and Bradley seem to be in a mode of, and Dave Caldwell seem to be in a mode of, you know, they're building a team for long term, not for immediate. And when they signed Henny to a couple year contract, I mean, to me, that was screaming, we're going to have this guy at the rudder for the next year or so, but we're going to draft a quarterback to come in and work underneath him and to learn the ropes. So I guess I didn't view Bortles as any kind of a curveball at all. I kind of expected it. I thought it would also come down to either that or maybe Sammy Watkins because of their wide receiver situation. And so I guess I wasn't surprised by it. You know, when I look at the draft, I mean, I thought the first real surprise to me was you know, the Titans at 11 taking the tackle out of Michigan, Taylor Lewan. You know, they have so many needs, and as you know from my philosophy, you can never get enough good linemen. I mean, I believe in good linemen, you know, all day long. And so, you know, not necessarily a bad pick, but certainly not one that was a glaring need at all in terms of their top four needs. In terms of their offensive line, so that to me was the first shock. The Lions taking, I guess you could argue also the Lions taking Eric Ebron surprised me quite a bit. You know, to some degree because they already had such bigger needs on defense. But again, they must be thinking, hey, let's get Stafford more weapons. Clearly, he would have gone two slots later to the Giants, I think, had he been available. So Ebron wouldn't have lasted much longer. I was a little surprised by the Steelers taking Ryan Shazier at
Big reach.
At 15. I thought that was reach. I thought he was a guy that should have gone mid to late 20s. I mean, I like him, but he's a little undersized. And I, you know, again, back to the theme of value where you're picking. I thought that was the sort of classic Marv Levy, especially how many times. How many times did Marv Levy reach for an Ohio State product?
That's true.
So
that's true.
That really felt to me like that was the Marv Levy move right there. So I guess I wasn't terribly surprised. To some degree, I'm surprised that Jerry Jones actually didn't go crazy and draft Johnny Manziel at 16. You know, Jerry Jones does not understand how to build a football team. And nor how to pick a coach. And so I thought for sure that he'd be, as a Cowboys fan, I was distraught over the thought of him taking Manziel when the Cowboys have such drastic needs on defense and on the offensive line. So that was a bit of a surprise just because he was disciplined.
Yeah, a rare bit of restraint there. So let me redirect some of what you were just saying to Jason and see about the bigger surprises. It should be noted, by the way, as long as we're talking about teams maybe reaching a little bit, I think the Shazier pick was more of a reach because he was not supposed to go in that range. But you talk about Ohio State guys who look good in pads, look the part. Certainly, Jason, your Broncos doing that with Bradley Roby at 31, a guy who had a really abysmal senior year, I can tell you from watching him a lot of the time, and a guy who has not really looked up to being the sum of the parts any time recently. But how would you classify, Jason, some of the bigger surprises in the first round from what Chris was just saying there? What were some of your thoughts?
Well, let me back up a second here, and I don't want to make this a thing, but here's going through the draft so much as we do before the actual draft occurs. There's so many permutations and so many different scenarios that could take place. And here's hindsight being what it is, and it's going to feel like I'm cheating a little bit. The thing is, Oakland was only going to take a quarterback if everybody except Derek Carr had been taken. If they literally went 1, 2, 3, 4, Oakland takes a quarterback. Otherwise, they're going somewhere else. They would have taken Watkins if he was there, Mack if he was there. And I think to some extent you can almost make the same argument for Minnesota. Minnesota has a defensive head coach for the first time and a guy who's really been overlooked for quite some time. And to think that they weren't going to go out and get a guy that they think is an elite or future elite defensive player, I think is crazy. So in my opinion, I think – yes, Jacksonville could have taken a quarterback, but I think after Jacksonville, the earliest you can even consider another quarterback going off the board, Cleveland included, is 11 with Tennessee, and that's only if they just didn't like anybody. They might have taken a Bortles if he was there just because they don't like what's left. Taylor Lewan actually didn't surprise me much because I had him pegged for sort of taking the best offensive tackle available, whoever that would have been. And that just may be me being lucky. So I'm just saying, as we go through over and over and over again, I actually had it where the first quarterback didn't go off the board until 20, and that was going the week before the draft. So just throwing that out there, just my opinion that I think things shaped up quarterback-wise a lot like we expected it might have. That said, Shazier is far and away the biggest reach. And maybe it's an Ohio State thing, I don't know, but he's one of those guys that looks great but may not have a position. And what really worries me I don't really care because it's the Steelers, but he's undersized, he's faster than all hell, but can he play inside linebacker for the Steelers? Because he sure as heck can't play outside linebacker for the Steelers. He's not big enough, strong enough. He's fast enough. I just didn't like that pick at all. And I agree with Chris 100%. He is a 24 to 32 kind of pick. And I don't even care what the teams look like. So he was horrible. I hate to say it, Rick, but Juwan James going in the first round was a travesty. Now, considering what had transpired, I guess you don't really have much choice. They needed a right tackle in the worst way after signing Albert. And if they had come out of this draft with nothing else but addressing the offensive line, that's good. I just would have taken Kwanjo 20 picks ahead of James.
Yes, absolutely.
I agree with that. I thought that was a huge, huge reach. That was going to be my second highest reach. And in some ways, he might even be the biggest reach because he doesn't belong in the first round. But that's, again, that's the Dolphins desperate, and they took the highest guy they had on their board at that point.
What I want to know real quick, just, Rick, and you can probably answer this better than any of the rest of us. For a team that was willing to jump up to get Deion Jordan, why the heck wouldn't they jump up ahead of Dallas to get the kid from Notre Dame, who is very, very good?
Well, a little bit of apples and oranges there, because what you're talking about last year, that's Jeff Ireland's last year's GM, new guy on the beat.
True.
That they brought over from Tampa. I will tell you this, not an auspicious start for him, not a good start based on what they did there. I agree with you guys. And as I pointed out, on our live blog. And if anybody wants to catch what was being said as the draft was going along, you can check out the transcript there. Same place you find the show, the FDH Lounge Multimedia Magazine, the FDHLounge.blogspot.com. As I pointed out, I'm harshing on the pick. I'm not only a Dolphins fan, I'm a Tennessee fan. So what does that tell you if I hate the pick? I mean, that really, you would expect me to homer for it on one side, if not two. And I agree with you guys. I thought it was absolutely abysmal. One thing I will give myself partial credit for, I missed on the guy, but as far as sliders in the first round here, I had a feeling between Calvin Pryor and HaHa Clinton Dix that only one of them was going to go as high as they deserved to go, because I didn't think teams in the middle of the first round were going to prioritize safety like that. Calvin Pryor going to the Jets, I think that's going to do a tremendous amount for them. HaHa Clinton Dix slipping all the way to Green Bay right before the Browns with Johnny Manziel. And let's talk about that. Let's talk about what they did earlier. A lot of times, again, because this program is based out of Cleveland, I do effort not to make too much of it Cleveland-centric. But, I mean, Cleveland was the biggest story of the draft, just like they will be in the NBA draft, spoiler alert. So we have an excuse to talk about this a little bit here and to kind of let it breathe. I know you guys liked what they did better than I did. The Watkins thing, yeah, I know they're getting the number one pick next year as well, but at what point do you plant your feet and stand and say, we're going for it this year. We're going to try and do something this year. If they knew about the Josh Gordon thing, I think it's grounds for somebody to be fired, quite frankly, to neglect the wide receiver position as they did and then let that happen. We don't know for sure what they knew, what was known when, et cetera. Jason, I'll start with you on this because you've been the more vociferous of the bunch here on Johnny Manziel, on thinking that the risk on the boom or bust thing here as opposed to the safer Teddy Bridgewater pick, and I think all of us would agree that that's a safer pick, certainly. But thoughts on what they did there? Again, best pair of lockdown cornerbacks that they've had since the halcyon days of Dixon and Minifield. One of the best pairs that they will have in the league now with Joe Hayden and Justin Gilbert. And I predict that Gilbert will relegate Hayden very quickly to the Minifield role of the two, because I think he's going to be the better one. But, again, Jason, thoughts on that pick and thoughts on what they did with Manziel and just rolling the dice on and really bringing the circus to town, as has happened since.
Well, when the Gilbert pick came across, anybody that reads the transcripts will see that I was in full-on panic Watson mode. I've been calling for Watson to be the pick since probably September. So that one really hurt when they traded back to not get him. In hindsight, I think the Gilbert pick is a stroke of genius, because when you look at him, especially knowing that he's going to a team where the other guy across from him is not a bum, Justin Gilbert's got the potential. He's got all the tools built to be a Pro Bowl-type caliber guy, if not a shutdown guy. Interesting on the Hayden thing. I'm going to reserve judgment on that one just yet, but we got to see him play. Now, moving into the Manziel pick. Admittedly, I am not a Manziel person, or at least wasn't to start. I was pretty much rejecting the idea from the get-go. However, a friend of mine implored me to go back and look at the film again, more as a prospect and not just watching a kid play football. And I'll be honest, everything I've seen, starting with him not running as much, the throws he makes, he does make some crazy throws he probably would be ill-advised to attempt in the NFL. That aside, though, he can make the throws. And his pro day, aside from the charade that was the black helmet and black jersey bit, he really did impress me on that pro day. He made throws I didn't think he could make. So, as a quarterback goes, I am all on board with the idea. Now, here's where I get amped up about it. And you guys would actually be better than I would to answer this one. When was the last time Cleveland picked the quarterback that the whole world looked at and said, that's the guy? That's the guy with the most upside. That's the guy with the strongest arm. That's the guy who can really make some plays happen. They've almost always, at least since they came back, taken the guy that looks safe or we can coach him up. They've never gone for the balls out, get it done kind of player. And at the very minimum, I'm at least open to that idea, even if it doesn't prove out to be the case long term. We've drafted quarterbacks 22 before, and where we're at now, no big deal. I don't see the big gamble on the risk reward. That said, I love his attitude presently, and I think if he's everything I think he is, he may end up being the best quarterback of this draft. Now, that's accepting the fact that I think he's somewhere between Brett Favre and Drew Brees with a slightly lower ceiling. I'm not saying he's a first-ballot Hall of Famer, but I think the guy can move the chains, make plays, and make this offense a lot more threatening than Bridgewater could, only because Bridgewater's a very good quarterback who's great at reading defenses. I just don't see him making explosive plays, and I would have been happy with that if Manziel was off the board.
Well, Chris, let me pivot to you and see what you think, because, again, from some of the things that I have read, they've proved to be very troubling to me as far as the analysis of how much he ran when he was in college, as far as what he did when the blitz was on him, his completion percentage facing the blitz versus some other players out there. So, again, seems to be really boom or bust, even based on his college production, which was phenomenal and which nobody is really doubting. The question is how it's going to translate to the pros. But, you know, the biggest roll of the dice perhaps by any team out there, the Cleveland Browns during the draft here. What were you thinking overall of what they did?
Well, let me first give Justin Gilbert his due respect because he was the Browns' first pick in the first round.
Yeah.
And I loved the move. You know, had we gotten Watkins or, you know, Evans or some other wide receiver there, I would have been very happy with that. With or without the Gordon news, my feeling is that they didn't know that at that moment when they made that trade down in that first pick, because I think that would have directly much more impacted it. That said, regardless, they trade down, they get probably the best cornerback in the draft, a guy who's a bigger, faster, stronger Hayden, who needs to work on his tackling. But his upside is huge, and I agree with you guys. I think that, you know, not this year, but the following year, I think Hayden will become our number two cornerback, and that's a great problem to have.
Yep.
So to be able to drop down and get a number one next year and a fourth rounder next year, don't forget about that because that's not going to be completely chopped liver, and get the best cornerback and solidify your backfield in a pass-happy league, was just fantastic. I mean, Ray Farmer gets it. He knows how to draft. And I think the proof in that, in the refocus of this organization, is the fact that they were willing to take a gamble on Manziel at 22. I would have been out of my mind upset had they taken that gamble at number four on Manziel and left it at that and called for the day. Because this team needs picks that are as close to a sure thing as possible, because we've had too many busts for the Cleveland Browns for too many years in the draft at so many different Browns that they could never risk gambling like that with the number four pick. Now, that said, to trade Trent Richardson, and tip of the cap to the former folks that got dumped, to trade Richardson basically for Johnny Football is a roll of the dice, a flip of the coin, or whatever you want to call it, that I think is fantastic. Now, I have a lot of question marks about Johnny Manziel. I think the guy is explosive. He is definitely boom or bust. He can move the chains. My big concern in watching him in college is and then how that translates to the pros is people call him electrifying. Well, he's electrifying because he holds on to the football. Well, holding on to the football in the NFL as quarterback is the absolute worst trait you can ever have. And so, you know, we got to hope that the things they say about him in terms of having a very high football IQ, you know, we all know he has that burning desire to win. And I think at the end of the day, that's where it's worth taking the risk, is that Johnny Football's been a winner at every level. The Browns locker room needs a change of attitude. This franchise needs swagger. It hasn't had any. And I think that this front office under Ray Farmer has been brilliant in how they've gone about trying to change that locker room. Now, say what you want about a guy like Mack. The reality is, and Rick, you and I talked about this off the air, my theory on Mack and why they did the transition tag is they knew Mack wanted to leave. Alex Mack did not want to play for the Cleveland Browns anymore. He wanted out. And so they put that tag on him knowing that they would have to match whatever deal he came up with. Rather than franchising him and trying to pick one up another year up, they wanted to lock him down, and they knew he was a guy that wanted to leave. And if you look at his comments before and after they did all that, he's, you know, even afterwards he's like, well, it's over, I got to get back to work. That's not a guy that's enthused about being there. You combine that with how they locked him up, and they went out and they got a guy like Dante Whitner, is a Cleveland guy who genuinely wanted to be in Cleveland. For a guy like T.J. Ward, not so sure. A guy like Joe Haden wants to be in Cleveland. He proved that by signing that, you know, obviously they put a huge contract in front of him. But I think what they've gone out and is they've been trying to change the culture, and I don't know how many people have really noticed that within that locker room, with guys that want to be here. And even if they have guys like Mac that don't want to be here, they were finding ways to lock them up long-term so that this team could benefit from it. So I like what they're doing. I love the Manziel pick from the swagger. And let's be honest, at the end of the day, it's still a business. You know, the Cleveland Browns are a business, and Johnny Manziel puts the Cleveland Browns on the map for the first time. I mean, you can turn on SportsCenter every day, and there's something about the Browns now on SportsCenter. And when was the last time you saw something like that? Usually for something bad, like, ha-ha, they fired the whole front office. Ha-ha, they fired their coach after a year. Ha-ha, the Browns are a joke. I don't think the Browns are a joke anymore. I think we have a front office that gets how to draft. And I go through this entire draft round after round, and I like what they did at every level. I love what they did with the gamble on Manziel. He may be a bust. Who knows? Maybe he just proves to be Doug Flutie Part 2. Either way, I like what they're doing. I love the attitude change. I love the swagger. And I like the fact that, you know, so far, I like the organizational skills and the hard-nosed nature of Mike Patton. I think the Browns are moving in the right direction. And I don't think most people have really come to recognize that.
I agree with everything you said about Ray Farmer. As far as the guy who actually made the pick, that being, of course, Jimmy Haslam's homeless guy, I hope that he is persuasive, and I hope he can get in the ear of Dan Gilbert and say, you need to take Andrew Wiggins. That's what I'm hopeful for. The guy got his way once. If he can lead the Wiggins coming to the Cavs, I would be very grateful to him this time around. But we're talking big picture winners and losers here, as I promised. Let's go by the three metrics, and I just want to see how this aligns with you guys' gut. The first metric that we're going to use, and I'll read you top 10, bottom 10. The first metric we're going to go by here, the Jason Jones top 100 of players. We devised a scoring system based off of that. The top 100 overall players in the draft. The top 10 teams, according to that scale, number one, Minnesota. Number two, Oakland. Houston is three. St. Louis, four. Buffalo, five. Tennessee, six. Chicago, seven. Pittsburgh, eight. Cleveland, nine. And Cincinnati, 10. The bottom 10 teams in this, counting up from the very bottom on this scale, 32 Miami, no big shock there based on what we said. Only giving them 10 points for their first-round pick of James. Pretty horrific there. 31 Indianapolis, 30 Denver, 29 Seattle, 28 Philadelphia, 27 New England, 26 Dallas, 25 New York Giants, 24 New Orleans, and 23 San Diego. I'll start with you, Jason, on the list of winners and losers based off of your scoring system here. What do you think? How accurate was it?
Well, based on the scoring system, I think it's very accurate in that it sort of judges teams by punch, what players really stand out above the herd. But we all kind of know that the draft it's not just in the first three rounds. You get guys later. So overall, I think it's slightly misleading in that it only really judges the guys in the top 100. That being said, if that's the metric we're using, then it's actually pretty accurate. I thought Minnesota scored huge with their first two picks, because if we go back even 2 months ago, you would have thought that if anything, it would have been opposite. Barr would have been 32 and Bridgewater would have been 8 or whatever it was. So that's clear. And on the other side of the spectrum, Miami absolutely kind of crapped the bed a little bit. I think they were so worried about need that they kind of pooched it a little bit. The rest of them are pretty straightforward, because based on that metric, I don't think that any one team destroyed the field. So I don't really have any complaints with any of the teams that you mentioned in the order in which you mentioned them.
Well, and I'll tell you what's interesting, you talk about the first three rounds, and that's where these guys all should go. Interestingly enough, two guys out of the top 100 not drafted at all, which is not a huge surprise. Every year you get a handful of guys that slip through the cracks that you don't expect to have happen. And in the case of the Florida guys, Purifoy and I think Roberson, it was the Florida guys. And they had the off-the-field problems, and so I had to wait to see who they signed with before I could really complete that tally there. Chris, let's see what you think. How does that raw listing of top players going various places, how does that square in your gut with your sense of the winners and losers?
Actually, I didn't think it was that far off for me. I really, you know, the teams that really jumped out at me that I liked their drafts a lot were I liked what Cincinnati did. I liked what Minnesota did a lot. I really liked St. Louis, Oakland, and Cleveland. I mean, those were my five that I thought they did the best job, top to bottom, 1 through 7, in the draft. And so, you know, based on the metrics that you went through, that's pretty damn close, actually. You know, you can sit there and argue about some of the order of that, but you know, I really like what the Raiders did in the draft. A lot, and I really like what the Browns did, and I thought St. Louis killed it. You know, teams that I thought kind of screwed the pooch on this draft were, and this might be surprising, obviously I thought the Panthers did a poor job. I didn't like what they did. I was not a fan of what the Titans did either. But the two that I think I might differ from a lot of people on, one is the Bills. I'm not convinced, and I like Sammy Watkins a lot, but I don't know that he's worth two number ones and a fourth round pick. I'm just not convinced of that. And then going into the rest of the draft, I wasn't enamored with a lot of what they did. You know, first year wide receivers rarely do better than 700-800 yards receiving in their first year, so he's probably not going to be an immediate impact player for them. You know, beyond being potentially just a solid, maybe rookie season, something to build on. So, and then the one that I'm probably going to disagree with a lot of people on was, and a lot of people love their draft. I almost always love their draft because I think he's one of the best in the business. But I didn't like what the Ravens did. You know, C.J. Wow. Mosley, I loved him as a college player, but you know what I worry about on a guy like that is I think there's a high probability that that Nick Saban used a lot of rubber off those treads in 4 years at Alabama. And I top to bottom, I'm not a fan of what the Ravens did in this draft. Time will tell, but I think this might be the draft where their fortunes as franchise could change a couple of years from now because they'll look back at this draft and say, none of these guys produced the way the Ravens thought they would. So put a pin on that on the wall. Let's talk about that one in a couple of years. But I think this was a bad draft for the Ravens.
All right,
Chris, sure most people don't agree with that, but that's just my opinion.
Well, maybe I should start with you for the next metric. I devised something by teams filling needs, and I added points and I subtracted points based on what they did as far as needs. And even when subtracting points, I was surprised to see that the Browns came in second on mine. But here's the top 10 and the bottom 10. Top 10, Green Bay, tied for second, Cleveland and the Jets. Number 4, Chicago. 5, San Diego. 6, Washington. 7, Baltimore. So on my thing, they filled needs. 8, Seattle. 9, Atlanta. 10, Buffalo. From the bottom up, Tampa Bay, 32. I think we can agree they really didn't do much to fill needs after the first round. 31, Kansas City, ditto. 30, Pittsburgh, and they scored well on Jason's one, but maybe not on filling needs. 29, Miami, a loser again, you know, either way you slice it. Tied for 27th, Jacksonville and St. Louis. Tied for 25th, Houston and New England. Tied for 23rd, Carolina and Houston. So there were probably a few there that surprised you, eh, Chris?
Yeah, but I think, you know, some of the ones that I didn't mention in my you know, losers in the draft, I mean, I didn't even bother to get into Miami. I just thought that was, like, obvious.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised by, you know, your how that worked out as it relates to the Rams. I really like what they did. So that's a little shocking. But, you know, again, you know, we can throw metrics and everything at it. I think, well, the thing we ought to do is we ought to go back one of these days. It'd be a great FDH project to go back, you know, 5 years and apply those grades to the draft and then see where they all are now and see if these metrics hold out historically or not. Prove themselves, because I don't know. I mean, I think that, you know, opinions vary very widely on some of these players.
They do. They definitely do. No question about that. Jason, were there any surprising winners or losers on that list to you?
Again, depending on how you apply the metric, I think all of this stuff is going to come out true within reason. I don't think I have any huge complaints with any of it. I'm with Chris, though. I do think that when you look at the whole draft and what it means for each team, I think St. Louis did really well. But, you know, like Cincinnati, it's become sort of this thing with their current regimes where you go into the draft just hoping that they're not going to snake the guy you like because they've been doing pretty well lately.
That's right.
Baltimore is interesting, sort of to combine this with what Chris said earlier. Baltimore seemed to pick what they think is a need at spots, and it depends on where they're playing these guys, specifically with Jernigan. If Jernigan lines up in three technique as opposed to playing your traditional defensive tackle, nose tackle, I really like that pick more. Very safe to say that what Chris mentioned about Mosley is accurate, but I guess my thing there is how many times is Ozzie going to pick a Alabama linebacker before ownership steps in and says enough is enough. So if he turns out to be Rolando McClain, then they got a big problem. But to answer the question, according to that metric, I think everything serves relatively true. And my only question, and it's going to sound like I'm beating a dead horse here, but I think Cleveland's draft is historically good in that in their six picks, they came out with four starters with two other guys that are going to be contributors on a serious level almost immediately. So my only question is, did they get deducted a lot for the wide receiver issue? Because otherwise, I think their draft was phenomenal.
No, I came up with a formula that deducted, I think, 3 points for every need that was left out there. And as far as it went, I awarded an extra point for any teams that got a stray useful player, whether or not it was going to be a starter. Like the guy that they got in the mid rounds here, Desir, I think he's going to be their nickelback. I gave him a point for that. Not going to be a starter, but nickelback is pretty important in the NFL these days. So I was awarding that. All right, let's look at the compilation then. Let's look at, theoretically, this should be the most accurate one here. Jason's top 100 formula plus my needs formula, averaging it out. Tied for first in this thing here. Chicago makes a jump up. Chicago and Cleveland tied for first in this formula. From there, the rest of the top 10, Minnesota, Buffalo, Tennessee, Green Bay, Oakland, the Jets, Baltimore, and Washington. The bottom 10 counting up. Miami, once again, they're a loser, whatever way you slice it. I hate to say as a fish fan. Kansas City, New England, Philadelphia, Indianapolis, Tampa Bay, Carolina, New Orleans, and Denver. Denver not scoring so well in the formula when you combine top 100 and needs filled. So I'll start with you, Jason. You're probably a little bit surprised to hear Denver's name get called out on that list.
Not at all. Let me be clear on this.
Oh, okay.
We pride ourselves in being objective and looking at things evenly.
Okay.
The fact of the matter is Denver goes into this draft, and anyone that doesn't believe that they are making every single decision based on a two-year plan is crazy. With that said, I think they picked Roby where they did because it was just the last of the corners they believed at some point immediately can start and be impactful. Now, the three of us can agree that they're probably wrong on that based on how Roby played, especially last season. And his head's not always in it. And if you compare that with the metric that I have with the top 100, I didn't have Cody Latimer anywhere near as high as some of the, quote, experts did. So in both cases, I'm not surprised at all, just based on their first two picks. Another one that we should probably ring the bell on is Carolina. And I know a lot of Carolina fans were just happy that they got one of those top five wide receivers. However, again, I think Kelvin Benjamin is one of those guys that went where he went because of his size. He's not fast. He's not quick. He doesn't catch with his hands, and he drops as many balls as he catches. And to be honest, if he didn't catch that game winner in the national championship, I don't think he goes before the first 50 come off the board. And then after what they did after that really wasn't very impressive either. I do think Coney Ealy was a nice grab where they got him, but after that, I think bottom falls out. And the one last thing I'll say is, although we're applying metrics and all's fair in mathematics and whatnot, I think you almost have to throw out New England. Because if Hageman turns out to be whatever, or Easley, or whoever it was, I forget, that they got in the first, who had some question marks, is anyone really going to be surprised? New England has a remarkable track record on picking guys that you don't think they should that pan out to be great. I remember we were absolutely beside ourselves with the Gerard Mayo pick, and that's only one of many. So,
to Logan Mankins in the first round.
Yeah, that's so true. If New England's picks pan out, I'm not going to be surprised one bit. With that said, I think that this the third metric we're using is actually the most accurate, and I would say not only do I not have any complaints, but I would probably stand next to that and say this is as close as you're going to find.
I agree with Jason. I don't have any real problems with the last metric and how that broke out, other than my gut feeling on Baltimore and this draft probably not working out for them. I thought Denver did a pretty lousy job. I hate the Roby pick. There is nothing in that guy that I saw in the last year, on or off the field, that tells me that he's somebody I'd want on my football team. By and large, I thought, that last metric, the way that broke down with Chicago and Cleveland, I think that's right. I think that's going to be fairly accurate as to who won this draft. And you might even, think about giving some bonus points in the future to, who got who in terms of the free agent signings after the draft, these undrafted kids, because I thought Cleveland did a great job in that as well. And then last comment, just on the Philadelphia Eagles, I read an article that said that their strategy is going after college graduates, guys that actually graduated. I'm curious how that's going to work out long term. I think that might be a really good model.
Could be. I mean, sounds like somebody in the front office, though, might have heard that Tim Duncan was a college graduate and might have thought it might extrapolate to the NFL. Who knows? But, as far as it goes, the only real cautionary note, I think, to any of this, and I'll start with you on this, Chris, because I think it goes to a point that you were making about looking back this in a few years. A team like Seattle, not exactly blowing our hair back on our ratings. Paul Richardson looked to be a pretty good pick, and some of the other ones, you look at it and you're like, okay, pretty good. But that's what they've done the last 4 years. That's how they built a team in historic fashion, turning over the entire roster in 4 years. And little to none of these moves would have really registered on our consciousness at the time. So I guess they would probably be the perfect example of it. And I'm not a big proponent of, you're going to wait 2 to 3 years to see how it pans out. No, I think we can pretty much pronounce Miami as a loser in the draft right now. There's a couple things that are pretty safe right now. But Seattle, don't they kind of stand as the whole best poster child of some teams you really do have to kind of wait to see how it pans out? If anybody's earned the benefit of the doubt, it's them.
Well, I agree. They've certainly done a great job with their later round drafting. I don't know where they get their intel and how their scouting breaks down, but somebody's doing something right. And I agree with 100% with Jason on the Patriots. I mean, I almost always put the Patriots aside and say, okay, the Patriots have had some busts. There's no doubt about that. I mean, every team does. But by and large, they tend to find guys that work within their system and their locker room and contribute, exceptionally well. And as of late, the Seahawks have done the same thing. Another team that I'm not sure where they're going right now is the Giants. I wasn't in love with their draft this year, and I don't know what their philosophy is right now. Same thing kind of goes with the Lions. I'm not quite sure what they're doing. So, I think that's where you get into, do you have a game plan? Do you have a philosophy? Whether it's, the Philadelphia Eagles now only wanting college graduates, whatever. Do you have a philosophy and do you stick to it? And do you plan to build that way long term. You know, the teams that have philosophies that are patient and build long term and don't panic seem to be the ones that do well historically.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.